Russell Hannon, officially welcome to Read My Lips Radio. Pleasure to have you on board. And I'm looking at the manuscript for your book, which is Stop Dreaming, Start Traveling, The Ultimate Guide to Traveling More and Spending Less. Very ambitious. This is a humongous manuscript here. It's well over 200 pages. Thank you for sending it to me. And Russell, let's talk a little bit about your background. Give us your story briefly about why you wrote this book. Why does this even matter to you? How did you get into the idea of writing a book about traveling better?
Well, you know what? Going back 10 years ago, I was anything but a travel expert. I felt I couldn't afford to travel much. I used to hold myself to taking one big trip a year, and literally I had to spend months saving up for that one big trip a year, and would get back and found myself spending a few more months paying off the balance. And I'll never forget, there's one trip where I came back, my first international trip abroad. I literally had a $2,100 cell phone bill, and I made the mistake of just thinking that travel was just inherently expensive. And ironically, in my day job, really my corporate career, it was my responsibility to get better results in less time using less money. So I've got a lean management designation, and I was saying to myself, there's got to be a way that I can apply this towards travel, so essentially to travel more and spend less. And then over the last 10 years, I've pulled off about a dozen free trips. I've been to many of the world's most expensive cities for literally the local cost of living. And I decided to share all those tips in my book.
Very nice. And I know it's going to be a great book. When is it coming out, by the way?
We're working on the date right now, likely this summer.
Okay, good. Well, I would love to have the hard copy when it's ready. So let's get down to business here. Let's talk. I'd like to talk about a couple of areas of the book. Your seven passports to the world. I found this interesting. Can I just read the seven one at a time, and you'll just explain why they're important, and then we're going to get into the questionnaires in the book about how do you figure out where you really want to go and what you really want to do. Is that good for you, Russell?
Yeah, certainly. Just a quick overview. Is any deal that you, Bonnie, I, or anyone we know has ever had was the result of one of seven things. And once you know what these seven things are, you can actually use them to your advantage and leverage them to save money on future trips. So that's what these seven things are that you're referring to.
Good. So number one is people. How do people figure into this other than we're people and we're traveling? Talk to me.
So people are your friends and family, people that you can stay with while you're traveling, and people that can help you, locals who live in places that you know, that can give you advice and steer you clear from pitfalls and overpriced areas.
Okay, the means. How are the means one of the passports?
Now, for ultra-economical travel, in terms of what I call it, means in this context are non-financial means. Those are loyalty programs and rewards points that you can leverage and use instead of cash.
Okay, knowledge. This sounds like probably the most important as far as I can tell, because really you need the knowledge to know all these other things. But go ahead, what specifically, which passport is knowledge?
Well, that's exactly it, Bonnie, is you can't get the deal that you don't know about. So what I do is I help people, I equip them with tools so that they can get the knowledge that they need to find the best and least expensive option for them.
Okay, creativity sounds interesting.
Creativity is looking beyond the obvious to make your own deals. So, for example, myself, there's one time I was in Las Vegas, and I got there a day before my friends. I was organizing a bachelor party. Turns out spas in Las Vegas have nap rooms. So when I got there, actually, what I did is I got there Friday night at 10 p.m., checked my luggage with the concierge, which was free, met up with some people that I had met on the plane. We went out late at night, and the spa opened at 6 a.m. I was the only person in line, got a day pass, nice plush robe and flip-flops, and I slept in the nap room all day. So I used my creativity to get a very inexpensive accommodations for one day.
That is fantastic. Now, it sounds to me, Russell, like you need to be fancy, free, and footloose. You can't have an entourage of a husband and wife and three children and a grandma and grandpa with you. You were on your own, essentially. So let's get down to basics here. This is something the creativity quotient rises as your personal flexibility it rises also. Would that be a fair statement?
Correct. Well, you know, you mentioned flexibility, which is another one, and they are closely linked. Flexibility, you read about this a lot. When you read in the newspaper, people that get these killer travel deals, and the real amazing stuff quite often is that they're flexible so that they can take advantage of opportunities as they arise.
Okay, next one. Well, we just did flexibility. Adaptability. I think this goes hand in hand with flexibility. Tell me, how do you use adaptability in the book?
Well, the difference from flexibility is more of a preventative approach, or I should say an offensive approach, where adaptability is a defensive posture, where you're keeping yourself in a position to be adaptable when you're on the road. For example, if you've got an around-the-world ticket and you have to leave, you're not going to be able to adapt to certain situations that arise. And by being adaptable, you can just take advantage of things at the last second that occur. And there are some more specific examples that I could give to break them apart, but flexibility is a preventative posture. Adaptability is after the fact.
Russell, these sound like we're talking about mindsets and a personal way of living, at least when you're that traveler. Let's do the last passport, and then you can comment on what I just said. Pure luck. How much pure luck do you need when you're traveling? If you have to plan, you have to figure everything out. When are you leaving? How long are you going to be gone? Where are you going to be staying? When are you coming back? What do you do in between? Pure luck. How does that play in?
Well, pure luck is the free trip that you won. It's I call it the black sheep of the travel passports because it's the only one that's beyond your control. You can't really control pure luck. So I usually don't talk too much about it, except to acknowledge that that's one of the seven reasons why people can get a free or very inexpensive trip. So that said, in terms of the mindset, really, mm-hmm. I believe for travelers, a lot of travelers pay five times more than they need to while traveling, and that's because travel is an industry that charges on average five times the local cost of living. If you take the average three-star hotel that goes for maybe $150 or $160 a night versus a one-bedroom apartment down the street that a local is paying $900 a month or $30 a night to live in. So what I tell people is by living like a local or having a local's mindset, you can travel for the local cost of living, travel significantly more, or essentially travel for what it costs for you to actually live at home, no more than that.
Very interesting. I'm remembering in the mid-1990s, my daughter was studying for 2 months in the south of France in Aix-en-Provence, and those were the days when I was still brave enough to get on a plane by myself, and I told her I would meet her in Paris, and we would spend 10 days together, that I would be the banker and she would be the tour guide, and that's exactly the way it worked. I got on a plane in the middle of a rainstorm at Kennedy, and it was one of those first-class JetBlue specials, and I was treated like gold on the flight. I mean, cloth tablecloth and cocktails and the whole thing. Sat through the rainstorm. I think that was the last time I flew without being afraid, but I was able to do it, and it was quite a delightful trip. Got to Paris. She met me at the airport, and we stayed. I had to book the flight at hotel. Got one of the only two available rooms, as far as I knew, in an air-conditioned floor of a non-air-conditioned hotel. It was 98 degrees that summer, Russell, and she and I were in this little tiny room thing. I think they had an elevator, and it was like the fifth floor, and that air conditioning was just worth every penny we paid. But here's what we did. We wanted to walk and travel and live like the locals. We didn't take tours. We didn't go fancy schmancy. We took the train. I don't know if they called it the metro. Everywhere. We took buses. We walked miles every day. We were among the people. And we did all of our sightseeing tirelessly. We came back and soaked our poor aching dogs, that's our feet, anybody that's in the tub. And then we spread a towel on the floor in front of the TV and watched the French news because we both spoke enough French. But before we went back to our room, most nights we stopped at a local grocery store, Russell, and we bought French bread. We weren't really into drinking wine, but French bread and juice and whatever the latest was a chicken, and we bought baba ganoush and salads and things, and we spread out a picnic on the floor on a blanket after we soothed our aching toes, and we had a wonderful picnic every night. A couple of times we ate out in style, but that's what we wanted to do, and we saw Paris on our own terms. I wasn't even thinking of a budget. And we went to the Eiffel Tower. We decided not to go up in the tower. It was very crowded. So we had brought a baguette and cheese and I think a small bottle of wine, and we spread out a picnic on the grounds under the tower. And that's how we enjoyed the Eiffel Tower. That's all we wanted to do that day. How does that sound, Russell?
You know what? That sounds like the idealistic picture when I think of visiting Paris is really, really exactly what you just described there. And that's part of the Parisian experience, the food that you have there, the baguette and cheese and the wine. That sounds absolutely phenomenal. And it's less expensive than going to, for example, if you eat at restaurants three times a day, that's going to add up to about five times your at-home grocery bill. And you get a lot more of that local experience like that.
It was lovely. I have to throw this in for Buck, who's still with us. Buck, we were treated to dinner by a friend who said, go big at a fancy restaurant, and I booked at a very nice place, and we had a lovely dinner, and that night when I got back to the hotel, I looked at the bill and realized they had very unkindly added on the equivalent of $50 for a bottle of wine we never ordered with dinner. So I went back to that restaurant the next day, and I waited, and I met the maitre d'. He was just coming to work, and I said, we're American, but this really isn't fair. You know darn well we didn't have that wine, and they credited my credit card. But it took quite a while to make our way back to the restaurant and wait for somebody and show them the bill and say, I hope you remember us, and we did get the credit. So, Russell, that happens too, right?
Yes, it does, absolutely.
So we were good consumers. We were good, and we were smart. I wasn't going to let them get away with that. Now, let's talk about build your dream travel plan. I love the way you laid this out in the book, Russell Hannon, and I don't know how much time we're. Let's see, what do we got here? Oh, we got about 8 minutes, maybe. Yeah, 8 minutes. So that's a lot of time on live radio. Let's talk about, to me, the main part was know yourself. How do you help people understand in the book, Russell? Why don't you describe what this section is about and what kind of questionnaire you take people through before they even start to plan travel? What do you do?
Well, most people have a misconception. Basically, when they're getting travel advice or when I start talking or offer something, they say, well, hey, I don't want to travel cheap. I want to do what I want to do and go where I want to go. And basically, what I offer is something that allows you to do that, travel where you want and how you want, whether you're a five-star traveler, a budget backpacker, or anywhere in between. So before you decide where to go, for how long and what to do, because I'm not going to tell you what that is first you need to make sure that you align it with what you want to get out of your travels. So really, the start of the book, it talks about getting to know yourself. What do you want to get out of your travels? What type of traveler are you? So there's actually a survey that you go through that helps you define your travel type. And then once you've defined that, then you go to the next level, which is you put together a list of all the places that you want to visit. And then the next part is to prioritize or sort them from those that are least expensive to visit today to those that are most expensive. And by prioritizing like that and starting with the one that's least expensive to go to today, you can really develop some good momentum and start traveling a lot more today at a fraction of the going rate.
I love it. I like the way you lay it out. I'm really intrigued with the know yourself, because I'm thinking, and I'm going to ask Buck this in a minute, that a lot of people that, oh, my neighbors just came back from this fabulous Grecian tour. They just came back from this wonderful Alaska cruise, and I have to go there. And I don't know if they've already weighed what they really want to do. They just heard something was great, and somebody they knew went, and that's good enough for them. Maybe I'm generalizing. Of course I am. But, Russell, that you're not saying that. You're saying measure how much you would spend on a trip. Assess what kind of experiences you want. Set your budget. I'd like to talk a little bit about defining your travel type. I think this is so key, Russell.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if the pages in the manuscript relate to the pages in the book, but I'm looking at define your travel type. I'm going to, and you have four answers here. Relax, unwind, and recharge. That would be a reason for going, not because Mary and John just went there. Creature of the night. I want the nightlife. C would be go all day. I'm a go-getter. I want to go from 7 in the morning as soon as everything opens to 9 at night and then pass out. And then somebody who loves both. I want to burn the candle on both ends. Now, there are numbers after each of these choices. What are the numbers? Is that part of a calculating your score, Russell?
Yeah, well, that's right. Well, essentially, I don't like to give away the scoring system, how it calculates it, because that could give someone a bias as they do the survey. But essentially, each multiple choice question has numbers tagged to them, the answers. And then when you get to the end of the survey, the ones that have the most check marks define your primary trait or your primary travel type and your secondary one. And the reason that's important to know is any time that you or I go on a trip, every trip we take could be for a different reason. We want to get something different out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And by understanding what those things are that we want to get out of each trip, we can match those to the destinations that are in our bucket list. And basically the dream travel plan just walks you step by step how to do it, and it's got forms. So for each destination on your dream travel plan, or we could call it a bucket list, you tag the essentially what you want to get out of that destination. Why would you go there? So then when the time comes to plan your next trip, you can actually use that as a filter, where you filter out those that don't align to what you want to get out of that trip. Then the second filter is to do it by those that are least expensive to visit. So that way you're getting the best possible price going to the least expensive destination without compromising what you're looking to get out of that trip.
I like that. And there's one more here I have to read, and then I'm going to ask Buck a question. You say on part of this question, I plan to drink. The first one is champagne and premium drinks, and we know where that one's going. The second one is vodka Red Bull. I've never had a vodka Red Bull, but I'm sure it's interesting. Number three is wine, and number four or D is lots of water. And the goal of this is what? To see how expensive your tastes are, Russell?
Well, you know what? There are certain travel types aligned to certain ones. People who are explorers, who go hiking all day or skiing, they generally go for lots of water. People
right.
who are going out late at night or college students may be going a bit more toward the vodka Red Bull. The champagne and premium drinks are people, I think the word in there is a bit of a flash packer is the word that we have in there. So those align to certain travel types. Sometimes wine, it's associated with people who may be a little bit older, or people who are just looking to unwind in the evening, have a nice simple glass of wine, be somewhere scenic. So each answer aligns to certain travel types without really giving that away while you're doing the survey.
I love that. Buck Jones, well, when you go on your next trip, you want to share some ideas with us just quickly? You've been listening. Are you going to relax, unwind, and recharge? Are you a creature of the night? Do you like to go all day, or are you a both ends of the candle type of guy? Buck?
I don't know which one of those I am. I love this idea, though. I think
this
cool? is terrific. I think it's very cool. I think, and I've never heard it explained this way, quite honestly.
I haven't either. Now, come on, Buck, I need to get an answer from you. Champagne and premium, vodka Red Bull, wine, or lots of water, or some combination. What kind of a traveler are you?
I'm more in that wine, lots of water kind of person. I'm usually on the go all the time. I like to do the skiing. I still like that part of thing. I haven't given that up yet, Bonnie.
You don't have to, dear. You don't have to. You can do
Thank
it all.
You.
Russell, it's we have two more minutes before we go into the what's next for you round. So why don't you cap off anything else you'd like listeners to know about how this system works and what you're trying to achieve here, Russell?
Well, ultimately, most people, what they complain about, they say there's so many options out there. I don't know where to begin, where to look. And this book, Applying Lean Management Principles, takes all the best travel resources out there, because there's mountains of travel advice, but it shows you how to leverage them all together so that you can multiply your savings, how to leverage the best websites with best price guarantees and price drop protection and credit cards that have trip cancellation insurance and also offer sign-up bonuses for free flights. And so you leverage them all together so that you can get the free or inexpensive flight, free accommodations, or the least expensive options for you, how to get around roaming fees, luggage fees. And essentially there's five things that that inflate your budget or make it fat. And I show you how to get around each one of them. So F for food, A for accommodations, C for transportation, then roaming fees and spending money. If you can slash your travel costs in those five areas, you can travel for the local cost of living, and the book shows you how.
Very nice. I have a quick question for you. Trivago is spending a bloody fortune on commercials with a really cute guy who he's got that 5 o'clock shadow, and he's just adorable, and he's saying, "Hey, Trivago," and he's showing himself all over the world and in hotel rooms. And are these types of sites something you would recommend, or using the instructions in your book? Is Trivago one of your go-to sites for finding best price travel, Russell?
Well, I really filtered the things down to the top two or three sites for everything. Trivago is not on the list of top ones. If we talk about hotels for just a couple seconds, TravelPony.com has shown and proven that it's less expensive, than other hotels out there. Now, Travel Pony is only in about 25 cities right now, but it is growing, and you get the discounts when you share your booking through your social network on Facebook and Twitter. They give you additional discounts. So they're not spending money on TV advertising like Trivago. Instead, they're asking people to share it. Yeah, so that's how they're able to offer lower prices.
Thank you very much. I'm going to ask you first, what's next for you, Russell Hannon? And I know you're going to send me a copy of the book when it comes out. A PDF would be great, as a matter of fact. Or a hard copy, I would love it, yes?
I'll make sure you get a signed copy of that, Bonnie.
Oh, and I would love it, yes.
Stop Dreaming, Start Traveling, The Ultimate Guide to Traveling More and Spending Less is being published by, well, my company, Break the Travel Barrier, Travel More, Stay Longer, Spend Less. And really it promises to enable people to pull off a handful of free trips every year, beat the best online fare every time. And we're going to be announcing the launch date very soon. The book is written. And in the meantime, you can sign up for publication updates at breakthetravelbarrier.com.
Thank you, and I'm going to spell your website because you know that's what I love to do. Break, B-R-E-A-K, V-T-H-E, travel, T-R-A-V-E-L. Take a deep breath, Bonnie. Barrier, B-A-R-R-I-E-R.com. Put it all together. Breakthetravelbarrier.com. You'll see a very handsome picture of the very handsome Russell Hannon, and you will see all about him and all the places he's been and read about the book and resources and everything. Russell, thank you very much.